All right, we're going to head over to the Zoom Cloud. Pretty soon it's going to be sponsored by, because, you know, we have studio sponsors in the real world here of capitalism. And old Warren Martin, he's down in Kansas, where they know quite a bit about the capitalistic market. How you doing today, sir?
Doing great, Jason. How about yourself?
You know, not too bad. It's a lot of places to start today, Warren, because we got to talk about your recent trade show visits, if you will. I know there was another one down in Kansas, and they got different names, you know, Koga, Ecoga up here, you know, they got names too. And so I'll let you, Cayuga, I think, in Colorado. And you've got Glenn Beck, you've got PBS. Also, we have some employee appreciation to talk about. And let's talk about PBS and Glenn Beck. We'll start with those, if you don't mind. And give us an update. When we last spoke, you were in talks with Glenn Beck. Nothing ready to go yet, but you were getting ready to launch. And then there was a hiccup in the PBS in terms of just some of the projected timelines. So let's start there, sir. How are you doing, first of all? How's life?
Life is great, and we're doing good. You know, down here we have Ecoga, which is the Eastern Kansas Oil and Gas Association. We have Cayuga, which is the Kansas Independent Oil and Gas Association. Then we have API Kansas that is down here as well. Those three organizations, they make up my board of directors. And so that's really kind of, I'm under those three organizations. And so anyway, we're doing good. Yeah, PBS, we had Viewpoint with Dennis Quaid. Dennis Quaid has a TV show that's on PBS stations called Viewpoint with Dennis Quaid, where he goes in and they pick out topics where people are doing things in unusual ways. They're disrupting the system, they're changing, they're innovating. And so they reached out to us and asked us about doing a show with us. And our innovation is changing the conversation about the oil and gas industry, taking it out of the political realm and putting it into a practical, personal context for people to really get a grasp of how important energy is, what the issues with energy are, where we're going in the future, how oil and gas plays into that. And so that's what we've been doing in our state for the 8.5 years that I've been here. And PBS kind of picked up on that, or Dennis Quaid's team picked up on that. They came and flew into Kansas. They did a film here for 2 days and put together a show that is finished. I saw the preview for it on Friday, and it's going to be released in June. It's going to go out to over 100 PBS stations around the country. The main day that it'll air on PBS stations is going to be June 23rd. Although it'll be available to those stations anytime in June, and then after June for one full year, they'll be able to pull that and use it if they like. But the main airing for it will be on June 23rd. I don't have a time because the way PBS works, every station has a different schedule. And so you'll have to check with local programming to figure out when Viewpoint with Dennis Quaid comes on in your area. But June 23rd is going to be the big day for us there.
Additional question to the Dennis Quaid portion. Yep. Little inside baseball for some of the people out there that wondering where this question's coming from. With the crude life, for example, which has evolved to This Week in Energy, we were a weekly scheduled program, weekly 60-minute scheduled program for 22 to 28 radio stations over 5 states. But we also have little micro shows or segmental shows that they can drop in, because when the Twins are done and the Colorado Rockies are done, sometimes they got to fill 5 minutes to 45 minutes of programming because of a rain delay or certain things, you know, life happens, if you will. Not everything is scheduled. So they'll drop in these interviews, like some of the interviews that you and I did, Warren, on oil or the Landman, for example. I bet that ran 1,000 times that, you know, you and I probably never even knew about it, but all these Colorado Rocky games that are going on that get done early because they're blown out. What, they got 8 wins this year? So, you know, take a look. Sorry, had to take my pot shot there. is this what PBS is doing too? Are they dropping in like little filler type shows in addition to the release?
So that's exactly what his show is. The way
Okay.
PBS broadcasting works, if you want 20 minutes, they'll go in and, you know, in a local, you have a local charity, you have a local fundraiser, and you can buy 20 minutes of time and they'll run it. And that throws their schedule off. And so Viewpoint with Dennis Quaid, they are short documentaries. And so they run anywhere from 5 to 10 minutes long. Ours is a little over 5 minutes long. Where they feature, you know, what we're trying to do, changing that conversation. And it's a show that is designed, while they do have a scheduled runtime, it's also a show that's designed to fill those holes where a game ends early or where a show ends early and they need to get to the next marker before they start up the next show. And so that's why it'll be available for the next year, where they can just pull it and drop it in to those holes and fill that time to get them back on schedule.
And just to go a little bit further with the inside baseball too, one of the reasons why I believe this is a very successful campaign to extend the conversation, if you will, because when we're talking about like oil and gas or nuclear or carbon sequestration or even solar or wind, it's at the point now where after 5 minutes, people get bored. They tune it out pretty quick because it's pretty high level. It's pretty technical. It's hard to do a sound bite about a grid, that type of thing. So these things are very important. And for us on our radio programming, for example, which we have plans to evolve into video too, but we'd have the same model, which is any interview we do, we don't want to do more than 5 minutes because we want to give people a 5 minute segment of a longer interview on the radio. It's almost like a little commercial for the longer video, if you will, because some people want to listen to the longer interview, but 99% of the people don't. They're just dropping their kids off at the soccer game, or in the case of the PBS, got done watching some live local, you know, boardroom council meeting type of a thing that they air in their regional live events or a sporting event, if you will. So these are very strategic and they're very important to the whole conversation. Was that played into this, Warren, kind of the shortness of it a little bit?
Yeah, so the actual show that Dennis Quaid, he comes on and introduces it, and then he does the outro. And that's a short segment. It's that 5 minute segment that you're talking about. But then we did a longer documentary that we have that we own that they produced for us. And that's what we'll run on our website and our social media. So it is like a preview. And then if you come to Kansas Strong, you'll be able to see the longer format of it and get more of the story. And so that's exactly what we're doing.
And to me, I think that is such a important part of the whole conversation, because it is really difficult to get, you know, somebody who's not in the industry or benefiting from the industry to sit down and actually listen and watch a lot of the things. There's a narrative out there, and, you know, oil and gas is, you know, we've talked about it before. They're being compared to the cartel. They've been compared to the cigarette industry. And I got to applaud you, because you're one of the few people out there that's actually not sticking your head in the sand and saying, you know, we're going to call a spade and take it and start digging and see what we get. And so what are you getting? What are you finding?
Well, I think that's a great segue. There's a lot of people that are really interested in energy. I've seen a change in our school systems. I've seen a change here in Kansas anyway. I've seen a change in our community. I used to go into an average classroom here in Kansas, and the first question I would ask is, how many people think we're this close, you know, just real right on the edge of transitioning from fossil fuels to renewable sources of energy? And 8 years ago, when I started asking that question, every hand in the room just about would go up, and that's what they thought. Today, very few hands are going up, because the energy conversation is beginning to change. People are beginning to realize that it's not going to be a switch that's going to take place like everyone thought it was 10 years ago. And so that's where the Glenn Beck deal comes in, is because we have put together a campaign with Glenn Beck. He endorsed Kansas Strong, again, endorsed what we're doing to try and educate the public. And we're running commercials on his show and throughout radio stations across Kansas. It's on his show right now, and it'll start up with radio stations across Kansas next week. The whole goal of that one is it's a little different than what we've ever done, because that one is really preaching to the choir. It's preaching to people who are already supportive of our industry, And the goal is to get them to go to oilisgood.com, which is a page on our website where there's shareable material, little videos and things that they can share in their social media, in their communities, with their schools. And that one is really trying to activate the base to do exactly what you're saying, to get your head out of the sand and become more of an advocate for our industry and really help us spread the word, spread the message of the vitality of the oil and gas industry, not just now, but the vitality of the oil and gas industry through 2050 and beyond.
I think this is such an important thing too. And I'm glad you're doing both of it, more on the, hey, we're going to reach the PBS crowd. And those are probably our target protesters, if you will. And then we're going to go throw some red meat to the lions that they're going to love this, because I actually think they're the harder ones to convert. I truly believe that the people that you're preaching to the choir, those are the hardest ones to get them to open their mind a little bit, because they've been so set in their ways and so long. And I was looking at this one, this is the, you mentioned API earlier, and this is ours up in the Bakken. It's the Dickinson chapter. We have the Williston chapter too. This was from when I spoke at the Williston chapter. And I want to say that this was in 2020, during COVID, after COVID. Anyway, it was during the ESG, kind of that nonsense was going on. And I was not a popular person in that room. And I wasn't trying to offend anybody. I was just trying to give them actual information of what's going on. And it was almost like, because it didn't come from maybe their superior or somebody that they knew better or trusted more or whatever the case is, I wasn't necessarily the right person to deliver the message. 100% of what I said came true, but it was a difficult conversation. It was about water. That's what it was. It was about their water rights. And a little bit of ESG, a little bit of WOTUS. That's what was going on there. Talk to me a little bit about that, because I don't think the industry understands it, and the people outside the industry, that sometimes speaking to your own industry is more difficult than actually educating outside of the industry, because, go ahead. Sorry, I don't know if you agree or disagree on that at all. I'm just, that's my.
I think the conversation is very different when you're talking to people in the industry and the people that are out of it. And the main thing is you talk about being set in our ways. You know, it's not so much that we're trying to change their opinions on the industry or change their opinions on what they think about oil and natural gas, because for the most part, they're right along with beside us. They're right there in agreement with us. What it is we live in a society where we have formed tribes. And we have tribes on social media. We have tribes in our community. We have tribes at work, where we constantly are surrounding ourselves more and more with people who are like-minded, that say the things the same way we say them, that express things the same way we express them, and believe the same things that we believe. And the challenge is trying to get those individuals to learn how to say something differently so that it impacts people outside their tribe in a way that is positive. It makes them think. It brings knowledge, not conflict. It brings understanding instead of a protest. And really trying to, that's where that changes. And that's hard for people to do, because, you know, you get a group of friends together, they have all these inside jokes and inside phrases they use, and they all understand what they mean by it. Anyone outside that group doesn't understand a thing about what they're talking about. And so really that's the challenge, is helping people understand we've got to learn how to talk about this in a way where, what's most important to you? What's most important to a lot of the producers here in Kansas is they want to be able to do their job without conflict, without pressure in their community going against them. Well, if that's your goal, then you have to learn how to communicate to people in your community in a way they understand, not a way you understand. In the way they understand what it is you're doing and the role you're playing. And that is really challenging, because it's asking people to say, okay, I want you to put your talking points on the side, and I want us to achieve that same goal you would like to achieve. But the way that we do that is the same way that you would put together a speech if you're going to go talk to someone. Number one most important thing when you're putting together a speech is, who are you talking to? The audience. Understanding your audience. And that's the real challenge, is getting people to step out of their comfort zone and put themselves in their audience's shoes to understand them and learn how to say things to them in a way that really changes minds.
Tribalism and Triggers. That's the name of the podcast we should start, Warren. Tribalism and Triggers, because
I can trigger a lot of people.
Well, and because that's been the last 5 years, honestly, yeah. There's been a lot. Social media has created a lot of tribes and silos,
yeah.
Buckets. You know, they've been called a lot of different things. Clicks.
Well, their algorithms are geared towards that.
Exactly.
Their algorithms are geared to bringing more and more people into your feed that believe and think and say things the same way you say them, to try and stop conflict. And in one way, that's nice. But in the other way, what you see over time is, and everybody complains about it, like on Facebook, everybody complains on Facebook that I used to see all these other people, and now I only see about five or six friends over and over and over again. Well, that's because the algorithm is shrinking your tribe to the people that are most like you and have the most in common with you. And this is really trying to get outside that and push those boundaries back out, where we're able to communicate with a wider community.
And the other part too is that some people are paying to be at the front of the line too. So a lot of the algorithms are based on, you know, pay to play. And this is because, and I don't want to get into this today, but shadow banning is a real thing. And a lot of government entities will pay for certain social media platinum levels. And you're starting to see that influence itself on social media as well. I don't want to bring up which site it was, but I asked my son, he's 19, if he was on this certain social media platform, and he was looking, doing some stuff on his phone, and he gave me a look. Keep in mind, he's a realtor. Mm-hmm. He works at the country club. And he's going to become a firefighter. Okay, so he's active. He's a community leader. And when I asked him if he was on this certain social media platform, I haven't seen a WTF look come out of an individual like that in years. His silence spoke resoundingly. It was awesome how offended he looked. He looked genuinely offended. And I went, okay, I've heard that more and more about the specific platforms, you know, and.
Yeah.
MySpace was the early one to take the dive because of all the AK-47 and pot references that were on there and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I don't get nearly as many likes on my MySpace account anymore.
Right. My Friendster account just isn't doing as well as it should be, right? And Ask Jeeves. Anyways.
But, and if I can hit a point on what you're talking about right there, because the pay-to-play is disrupting social media and changing it to more of an advertising platform more and more. The result of that is people aren't paying attention to it.
Correct.
They scroll right past. They don't. And so that's where we kind of looked at it and said, why would we spend all that money when your return rate on that is worse than direct mail? And direct mail is less than 1%. And your return rate on social media oftentimes is even worse than direct mail. So, and when people see it, they automatically know that it's paid for, that it's oftentimes politicized and biased. And so that's where our campaigns, all of our campaigns, have been about communicating with people. And that's why this Glenn Beck deal, I think, is a big deal, because it's asking people not to place an advertisement, but to have a conversation. Have a conversation with the people that are in their community and giving them the resources to have that conversation. That changes minds.
I'm just telling you, there's a market out there for respect and that kind, and people are, you know, like a desert looking for water for that kind of thing. And when you ask somebody just to give you a chance and then go make up their own mind, it's a longer play, but I believe it's the more effective one. You know, short-term gain equals long-term pain. That type of thing.
Well, I just got back from a conference. I went and spoke at Leadership Kansas. Actually, I'm wearing their shirt today. But I went and spoke at Leadership Kansas, and it was a program I went through. I've spoken to them every year for the past 4 years. But this event, I went to Garden City, and when I got there, I jumped on a bus that had 40 leaders from across the state. And I talked to them on the bus while we're driving out into the oil field in Garden City, and we talk about what a pumping unit does, what a rig does, what a workover unit does, what tank batteries do. We kind of talk through all that, but also sprinkled in the energy conversation and where we're at, where we're going, and what the reality of our energy situation is, especially with the oncoming of AI, and what the needs are going to be in the future. And so we just had that talk. It was a 30-minute talk while we were driving in a bus, and I got several emails back. One lady, a lawyer out of Kansas City, she sent me an email and said, I had no idea I needed a TED talk on energy until you spoke. And I realized that I had no clue what energy was really all about. And so it went on, but that's the type of conversation that changes people's minds. It's not, you know, politics. It's not just getting up and saying, drill, baby, drill. It's not fighting to say we need more oil. It's helping people understand, because we're rational beings. If you can wrap your hands around the conversation and the issue and really kind of see it logically, then I leave the conclusion to you, because I believe everybody will come to the same conclusion that we don't need to be turning off any energy sources right now. We need to be figuring out how in the world we're going to expand our energy sources going forward, because we're running out of time to be able to keep up with the energy demand that's coming.
This is why I have a hard time doing radio interviews, and why I enjoy podcast interviews more, because if this was on the radio, I'd have to let this slide. But because we're doing a podcast and we got a little bit of time here, did you say that you did this on a bus? That you did this? Okay.
Yeah,
okay. So not only do you give 250 lectures and presentations and speeches at conferences and rotary meetings, now you're doing them on buses?
Now I'm doing on buses. That's actually the second bus speech I've done this year.
TED Talk, by the way, TED Talk too. It's a TED Talk bus event. I think you just opened
that
up
was
a
her
whole
words.
New market.
I've never done a TED Talk. I don't think they'd accept me, but
I've actually got the pre-rejection letter too. I've gotten the pre-rejection TED Talk letter. Open it up. Yes, Jason Spies, you have been rejected from any TED Talks. I didn't even apply. They just pre-rejected me.
But I did one earlier this year with another group that was here in Wichita, and they were going out to their Textron Aviation, which is where Beechcraft airplanes and Cessna airplanes are built. And so a lot of people don't know that Wichita became the air capital of the world because of the oil and gas industry. It was a geological discovery, the first time that geology was ever used in history to find an oil field before a well was drilled. Charles Gould and that geological discovery led to Stapleton number one in the oil boom. That oil boom led to Wichita becoming the air capital of the world, because there was millionaires over there who had been in World War One, had seen airplanes, and they wanted to build airplanes. And now they had the money to do it. And so they began bringing people to Wichita to begin building those airplanes. So I jumped on the bus and I told the entire history of how a geological discovery in the oil field made Wichita the air capital of the world, while they were driving to Textron Aviation to learn about Beechcraft and Cessna airplanes. And so that's the second bus talk I've given this year.
That is awesome. That is awesome. And employee appreciation, let's talk about that too. You mentioned Garden City, right? That's where the employee and I'm going off my mental notes. This is the first time in my professional career, Warren, I just cleaned out my backpack. I got like the Swiss Army knife backpack that's really good for carrying electronics and stuff. And I just cleaned it out, and it's the first time I have not one scrap of paper, but I had one pen in there, but not one scrap of paper. So I have to do this off memory. Normally I like to take notes because I'm a writer and editor and publisher by trade. But talk to me a little bit about employee appreciation coming up. Is it Garden City? Was that right?
Yeah, we're looking at Garden City, and we're also looking at Great Bend.
Great Bend, Montana?
Great Bend. No, Great Bend, Kansas.
Now, where's that? I'm not familiar with Great
it's
Bend.
It's pretty much right dead center of the state, and it's right in the middle of five of the top 10 oil-producing counties in the state.
Is there like a bend in the geography?
There's a bend in the river. Yeah, there's a
in
bend
the river. Okay.
In the Arkansas River.
Okay.
And so So those are two areas we're looking at doing our oil field appreciation events next. We're going to do the one in Great Bend in July. And so we're looking forward to that. And again, that's one more time where we're trying to do two things. We're trying to show the oil and gas workers that are out in the field how much they're appreciated, how important their job is, help them understand how vital the role they play is in who we are as Americans. And then the second component of that is trying to give them information where they're able to go back to their communities and share with their schools, share with their friends and family. And we've already done three of these. They've been really well attended, and we've got several school opportunities to go speak at schools from those events. We've got some community invites to come speak in the community from those events. And that's again, it's trying to help people realize that what people really want to have is they want to have a real conversation. We all like to get on social media and throw that one-liner out there or throw that little punch and that little jab and see all the comments, but that changes nobody's mind. It changes nobody's mind. And so what really I believe most people are longing for is true understanding. They want to understand an issue. And that's what we're trying to help people do, is we're trying to help people understand it, and we're trying to help people who do understand it have the tools to help other people understand it.
You said something that made my Libra mind shift into a little existential gear here. I like to do existential energy at times. And, you know, you mentioned about how people like to take their jabs and their one-liners. And I used to say that they'd sling their verbal daggers and arrows and that kind of stuff. And really what we're talking about is competition. That's what they're doing. They're competing with each other, who's either more right, more funny, more mean, I'm more this than you. And it's too bad they couldn't do that with something good, like compliments or something. And the sad part is a lot of people think they are. And that's the part where we get a little bit dangerous here, because I think it would be just so interesting to see social media if people were slinging compliments back and forth as competition, as opposed to insults, Warren. And I'm probably going to get kicked off of Zoom for being so positive right now. I don't know, but would that even work, Warren? Like, am I just in crazy land here?
Yes, you're in crazy land. and it doesn't work. It doesn't work because the reason it doesn't work is because we as people, when we are complimented, we take the compliment. We accept the compliment. And what keeps the banter going is we don't accept defeat. And so that's where that one-upmanship really takes place. And so it's, you never feel defeated when you get complimented. And so there's not that same energy behind it to try and win, because you won. And so, you know, that's why I think, you know, on social media, negativity reigns, and it reigns because people, they want to fight. When something hits them the wrong way, they want to fight. When something hits them the right way, oftentimes they don't even hit the like button. They just accept it and move on. And so it's just the way we're wired as people, I think. And I think that's why we have really focused on the conversation side of it rather than those, you know, one-liners.
Well, it's kind of like when we would do our reviews of Landman, you know, we didn't hold back. You know, we held the industry accountable on things, and we also held Hollywood accountable on things. And I think you develop more trust that way with the people on both sides. They look towards that a little bit more. Is that how you approach some of these like industry dinners when it comes to, say, whether it's an employee appreciation or something within the industry, if you will? Because even that's a little different when you're talking with executives versus employees. You got to be a little bit different. But I want to get back to the employee appreciation thing here. Walk me through what that looks like for the average person, because that's who you're looking at, right? The workers. This is more for the workers, not the executives, or both.
It's for both, but we're focusing on the workers. We're focusing on the guys that are out on the rigs or throwing chain that half of them come in, they're covered in oil and grease, and, you know, they come straight off of the rig to be there. It's an
They're
event
not
where,
people like you and I that get paid to go to those events.
right, exactly. And I have to talk with you about that. I don't know that I get paid to go into any of them, but anyway, but we go, so we invite them out, they come out and, we give them free drinks. We give them a free good meal, and just kind of have a socialized time where we give away, everyone there. We have just piles of t-shirts that share Kansas Strong's messaging, and they're able to take t-shirts with them, hats, cups, you know, a lot of content that way. We got brochures for them to take, and, you know, just like you would at any trade show, but it's just giving that to them. And then once everybody kind of sits down and they get their meal, I talk to them for about 20 minutes, and it's a highly motivational speech about why you should be proud of the job that you're doing. And then, but to get to that point, why you should be proud of the job you're doing, we start out with how desperate the world is for more energy right now, and then the role that our oil and gas industry plays in that, and then the role they play in the oil and gas industry and why they should be proud of the job they do. And then we end with, you know, we want to share this message in the community. We want people to know what it is that you actually do out there. Help us out. And then we end the night by, well, last one, we gave away over $4,000 in raffle items, from grills to power tools to safes, all kinds of things. And we drew tickets and gave away over $4,000 in raffle items, and then sent them on their way, hopefully carrying that message into the community. And I know it works, because one of the places we went, my grandchildren go to school there, and they had their field day to finish up the school year. And I went to the field day, and there was two other people there besides me that were wearing Kansas Strong shirts. And I went and asked them, you know, about the Kansas Strong shirt. And one of them got it at the event and was at the event. The other one got it from her spouse, who was at the event. And both of them could tell me what Kansas Strong was doing and what we're trying to communicate. And both of them told me who they've talked to about Kansas Strong since the event. And that's the whole goal. It's just enabling people to be able to take the message beyond themselves to someone else.
And you mentioned Great Bend. And what was the other location?
Garden City.
Garden City. And do you have dates on these yet?
We do not have the exact date. Garden City will be in July. Great Bend will probably be in October.
Oh, okay. Great Bend in October, Garden City in July. Okay, we'll have to circle back and get people some information on that as well. Messaging right now is a little bit difficult. There's a split within the Republican Party, whether it be rhinos and elephants, I guess it'd probably be the split, the animal split, if you will. Little split in the industry as well, with carbon sequestration and non-carbon sequestration. How's it going out there for you, Warren? You know, you're trying to please everybody, but inform everybody. You're also, you know, trying to keep the methane laws down and a few other things like that. So talk to me a little bit about what's going on in your world, because there's landmines everywhere out there.
Yeah, in our world, you know, we, Kansas, besides Texas, you got to take Texas out because it's a huge state, but besides Texas, Kansas has the most, we talked about last show, we have the most stripper wells or marginal wells of any state in the United States. And so, you know, right now with oil price being where it's at right now, that is what is really hurting our industry here in Kansas. Is it's so low that we can't afford the labor, we can't afford the drilling to go out and continue to put in new wells to be able to keep our production levels up. So our production level is dropping more than it should be. We're always in a rate of decline, but it's dropping. That rate of decline has increased incredibly because of the price of oil. And so, you know, our messaging right now is really talking about the fact that if you lose those marginal wells that account for 15% of the oil production in the United States, the United States is no longer the leading oil producer in the world. And Saudi Arabia already sees that. And that's one of the reasons they're flooding the market right now, and they've done it for 2 months. They're going to do it in June too, to try and take away from the shale industry, the shale boom. But also, you know, that's part of it. The other part of it is to try and force oil and gas companies out of business, or at least to shut down wells, because they know that if you shut down a well, you can't bring it back online as fast as you can shut it down. And a lot of times those marginal wells, when they are shut in, they don't come back online. And so, you know, that's really the messaging that we're focusing on right now, is helping people understand that scenario, because that really doesn't seem to be a lot of people's calculations on the political side or the public side in what's going on in energy right now. But that could be very damaging to the United States standing in the oil and gas world worldwide.
What are the number one issues for your state then? You have stripper wells, so they have their specific issues. You know, taking a look at the other states, they've got issues because so much of their tax budgets, if you will, their education budgets and their transportation budgets are reliant on oil and gas, whether it's through the workers or through the gas tax. There's legitimate issues here. Where are you guys at when it comes at a state? Do you have, like, you know, three action items that they're kind of looking at right now?
I think we got number one is the methane rules. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Trump has overruled the methane rules and basically through executive action has made them null and void. But that only lasts as long as his presidency lasts, and then it's incumbent upon the next president whether or not that those will be permanent or not. Really, we need Congress to act. Trump has also put in hundreds of deregulatory executive actions to deregulate the industry in a variety of different ways. But again, we need Congress to act to make those permanent, but rather than just based on executive order. So number one is there. And that uncertainty that is there as far as, okay, we're, that helps for the next 2 years. What happens after that? What happens if we lose Congress at the next election? And so that's a major issue for us. Number two is electricity. We pay some of the highest electricity rates of any state in the United States. And electricity rates for the oil and gas industry, we do not get the industrial rate that other industries do. And so electricity on marginal wells, that is one of the biggest factors as to whether you can keep a well going or not, is can you afford the electricity, or does the electricity wipe out your margin where you can't make money running that well? So electricity rates is a huge part of that as well. And then we've got a few little environmental things that I think right now we're okay on, but they continue to pop up. Of course, water. Waterways mm-hmm. is always an issue, and out here the prairie chicken. But both those seem to be going right now in the direction we want them to go in. But they're something that needs to be, that we need to keep our eye on.
Is the prairie chicken the same as the sage grouse?
It depends what state you're in.
Okay.
One state's a sage grouse, the other state it's a prairie chicken.
I think that is
I
the
think
most.
They are. I don't know that for sure, but I think they are.
I'm beginning to think that the sage grouse and the prairie chicken is the most powerful warm-blooded animal on the planet.
Yeah,
it literally will move mountains.
Yeah. No.
So anyway, not to make light of it, I just between the newts and the salamanders and the sage grouses, that has done more for my education and native biology than any college or any high school class I've ever taken in my life. And I owe that all to the oil and gas industry for that education.
Yeah. So,
it's true though. Otherwise I would just be inundated with the propaganda that's all lollipops and everything. One of the reasons why I'm a huge supporter of the oil and gas industry is because of their reclamation, is because of their respect for being a steward of the land. I tell people all the time, there's a very good chance we wouldn't even have any archaeologists left if it wasn't for the oil and gas industry. how many jobs do they give down in New Mexico to go look for Indian burial heads and that, you know, the arrowheads and that kind of thing. So it, to me, that's one of the more underreported stories as well, is how many jobs they literally do support that probably protest them on the bigger scale of things, Warren. But anyway, that's just life. That's just messy.
And that's a, you know, that's, you're exactly right, because, you know, you put them on an endangered species, put the prairie chicken on a endangered species list. That's all everybody knows. And so people just assume that that means they're endangered. Mm-hmm. When there's actual evidence now that has come out, at least in one report, that shows that the oil and gas industry and oil work on a property actually helps the prairie chicken population, because it makes the property less used than other properties that are out there, as far as surface use. And over time, it actually helps the prairie chicken population. And so, you know, there's data out there that shows that our prairie chicken population is actually increasing now, rather than decreasing. And those are stories that people aren't talking about that I think, you know, is finally starting to become part of the conversation under the current administration.
You know, what's interesting about that too is I tried to do a story on that once, and we'll wrap up after this because I'm taking a look at the clock. But so in, I forget which county it was. I believe it was a county south of Bismarck, and it was more pipeline related issues, because there was no oil and gas activity. It was more pipeline, I think. But the prairie chicken, of course, came up because the pipeline was going to disturb a prairie chicken nest or something like that. Sage grouse out there in that neck of the woods. But I'm not kidding you. It was like 2 years later, there was actually a hunting season. There was so many. And I wanted to find out why. And my belief was what you just said, that it was because of the reclamation and because of the steward respect of the land given by the energy companies, there is such a boom that this endangered species actually had a hunting permit within 2 years. Like, are you kidding me? But bureaucrats, man, they stand in your way of finding out some of the information. They really do. Oh, it's not easy to find if you're a reporter and that kind of thing. So anyway, but just to validate your story out there. Yeah.
I grew up hunting prairie chickens down in New Mexico, and we did every year. We go out and hunt prairie chickens. And so I was shocked when I came to Kansas and I was like, wait, they're on the endangered species list? They're trying to get them on the endangered species list? We hunt them. People are flying in from all over the country to come to our farm down in the sand dunes of New Mexico to hunt these prairie chickens. And so it was pretty shocking when I first came to Kansas and saw that, because I'm like, man, I've been hunting these my entire life. But you do know the best way to eat a prairie chicken.
No, I do not. I didn't even know you could eat them. What is it?
Yeah. The best way to eat a prairie chicken is you take the prairie chicken, you get a 2x4, and you stretch it out and nail it to the 2x4 so that all the muscles are stretched out really good. Heat up your oven to about 400 degrees or 450 degrees. Put it in the oven and let it cook until, you know, it's just really done. Then throw away the prairie chicken and eat the 2x4.
I was going to say.
They are tough eating, I'll tell you that.
It sounds a lot like the Canadian goose, or one of the gooses, that it's just really some tough eating up there. They don't even make jerky out of it. It's so greasy and tough. But anyway, so, well, all right, sir, we'll have to wrap it up now. But what's the websites and the good stuff for people to go to find your Dennis Quaid PBS? You got some Glenn Beck stuff coming, and then also dates for future events.
Yep. So Dennis Quaid, check out your local PBS scheduling. It's going to be, again, coming out in June. Look at that June 23rd date. That's when it'll be on most of those stations. After June, we'll have stuff up on our website. We can't release it until after it airs. So we'll release stuff on our website at kansasstrong.com. They can find out more about us at kansasstrong.com. And if you're interested in that Glenn Beck campaign, you can go to oilisgood.com. And you can hear the Glenn Beck commercial there. You can see some shareable stuff that we're encouraging people to share. And it's at oilisgood.com.
Warren Martin, Kansas Strong, thank you very much, sir.
Thank you. You have a great one.